agenda, and if we have, we will then proceed. Anyone without? So you don't have. We need one copy, one extra copy of the agenda. Okay, that's fine. All right, in terms of the agenda, we are on item number one, which is opening and welcome. Shall we seriously invite God to come and guide us? Otherwise, we can do whatever without him. That thing will not be, you know, will not be a value add. Amen. Well, good morning, honorable members. Good morning to the official from the Department of Higher Education and Training and the officials from the Portfolio Committee on Higher Education and Training. I'd also like to greet the staff, all stakeholders, and all guests. You are so welcome. Actually, I'm feeling so comfortable in this meeting. Dr. Fick, I'm sure you understand Mr. McLaughlin. You know, they remind me of the good old days. Okay, no, that's fine. That was a delight alone. Come again? No, even these ones are, but they are also old, good, you know, good old days. Yeah, okay. I'm also happy here. Well, I wish to welcome all of you to this very, very important meeting. It is a meeting where we will be receiving a briefing from the Department of Higher Education and Training on the funding framework for CTAS and to discuss critical issues of value for money and service delivery efficiencies. Okay? In this sector, the CTAS sector. Okay? I don't want to lie to you. We are seriously looking for money. And it's not out of our mandate. It's one of our mandates. Find money, and then if we find it, then we can influence, you know, amendments to the MPBTS, medium term budget policy statement. Yeah. So we are looking for money. We don't want to hide. So why we said you must come, it is because we suspect there's money that we can get and redirect to the Department of Education, because we're desperate also. We want money for the Department of Education. Department of Higher Education, yeah. And we also, we're looking at if there's money that can be redirected to institutions of higher learning or post-education, post-school education sector. All right. So it's not a secret. At least, Mam Paho, you now know. We really are looking. Where we can find money. Well, the CTAS have a significant role to play in this regard. As honorable members will know, our central challenge in the economy remains the need for the rapid creation of jobs. The CTAS have a significant role to play in this regard, though the implementation of the sector skills plans and other skills programs. Our economy needs to grow faster, and our budgets call for doing more with less and entrenching good governance. The key issues that honorable members highlight today in the discussions with the DHET will assist the committee in processing the 2016 MTBPS so as to formulate relevant recommendations for the 2017 medium-term budget in how we can be able to better position the CTAS as catalysts for growth and development. Let's have a robust and fruitful engagement as we work towards radically transforming our country. I thank you. We will now move on to apologies. Do we have, so we don't have any member of the Portfolio Committee on Higher Education, but were they invited?
Yes, Chair.
Okay, all right. Apologies.
Good morning, Chairperson, members, guests and colleagues. We have a number of MPs who indicated that they will be joining the meeting a little bit later. They are Ms. Manana, Mr. Sheikh Imam, and Mr. Duabaza. The apologies for non-attendance is Ms. Lone Tlangwini and Ms. Madlopa. Furthermore, Ms. Seno Konyana indicated that she needs to leave around half past 11. And we also received apologies from both the Minister and the Deputy Minister of Higher Education and Training. Thank you, Chair.
Okay, and then let me check from the Department.
Thanks very much, Honorable Chair, and members. Is the Director General of the Department of Higher Education and Training. He is attending some very pressing matters.
Okay. The National Treasury. Did we invite them? Members, we have just received apologies. Now I'm putting it to the honourable members. Do we accept the apologies? Do we accept the apologies, honourable members? Nukwanyana?
Yes, so I move that we accept the apologies.
Any seconder? Thanks, Mr. McLaughlin. Shall we then move to item number 3, which is presentation by the Department of Higher Education and Training. But let me find out from, okay, Honourable Member McLaughlin.
Sorry, ma'am, just before we start with the presentation, some time ago we requested that we be furnished with copies of the letter that sent to the department so that we know what brief the department had. And for a time that request was complied with and we got those. It stopped happening again. So when I started preparing for this particular presentation, I didn't have the benefit of seeing what the department had been asked to give us. One of the things we used to ask on a regular basis was to limit your presentation to 12 slides. I don't know whether that message got to them or not, but obviously that wasn't complied with. But ma'am, with all due respect, this presentation is a presentation the department should be giving to the Portfolio Committee on Higher Education, not to this committee. There are only 6 slides in here that are relevant to what we do. The rest is all to do with their non-financial performance. It's not really our function. And I just wanted to put it on record right at the front that I'm not happy about the fact that this, obviously it's not a popular time to have a meeting of this nature on a Friday morning. Lots of people don't come. They come late, et cetera, because they're not here. And then if we have to deal with this kind of thing, which seems to be not really what we're here for. It's more like a box-ticking exercise. Even on the program, it doesn't say that this is in compliance with Section 6.2 of the Money Bills Act. So I'm not really sure what the purpose is here today. And I just thought I need to raise this with you because it seems to me we're wasting our time and the department's time if we carry on like this. We should be doing the job we're supposed to be doing here, not some other sort of function that I'm not quite sure what it is because it's not clear from the program. Thank you, ma'am.
Okay. Thank you for raising your concern, Mr. McLaughlin. But then you will remember that as a committee, we looked at our program of action and we adopted it. When I asked if we all agree with the program, that's where I expected you to raise these matters that you're raising here now. But it's fine. Maybe there was an oversight because we must actually look at the program. And when we say we adopt the program, we should be knowing what we are adopting. Where I am sitting, This is it's an information session. And in our discussion in the meeting, we said we're not sure if we are benefiting from the CETA input-output. Can we get them to get the department to come here to present to us so that we can, you remember, look at whether some of the CETAs cannot be collapsed so that we can leverage more money for other programs. Oh, I'm sorry, for institutions of higher learning. That's what we said. That's why when we opened, I said, we're looking, you know, we're looking where we can find money that can be redirected for the effective and efficient running of the institutions of higher learning. We are also trying to respond, remember, to all those protests by the students, because we said we also have a role to look at where we can find money so that those institutions can be adequately funded. But we are looking. So we can only do that with the information that we have and then engage in a vigorous discussion and then maybe arrive at whatever conclusion on whether there is money and whether we can request for collapse of some of the CETA so that more money can be redirected to the universities. Honorable Dr. Fick.
Thanks, Honorable Chairperson. The issue is not the program. You correctly said that we agree with the program. I think the purpose of this is to engage with the department to, they obviously wanting to, as you've indicated in the beginning, to ask for more money, which is needed. And that's where the problem is. If I look at this presentation that we have in front of us, I don't think anybody would give more money because there seem to be more problems than anything else, and it seems as though the department is not spending the money efficiently and effectively. So I think that's where the problem, and that's where my colleague is raising the point, is not the program itself, it's what we have been given in order to convince us, to convince the Treasury to give more money, and that's where the issue is. So wherever the breakdown is, we're just raising a point.
Yeah,
or my colleague, it's just so that we, in future, so that when we get information, it must be information that we, as the people that, in my colleague's words, ensure that there's enough money or to follow the money, we need to make sure that this is a money asking exercise. And this year is more giving problems. And you know, when there's no way that you can give a department more money when there are so many problems, because I've read the presentation myself, and it seems as though this needs to be fixed before any money is given. But anyway, that's the issue that I just want to endorse what you say, Honorable Chairperson.
Yeah, I'm aware that due to budgetary constraints, we will not find new money. But we're looking at how we can merge some of the CETAs and then redirect whatever saving from that merger to the institutions of higher learning, to the run of the institutions. Because remember, that's where the problem is. The annual increase, your 8% increase, and also just the operational costs of the universities, which we think could have triggered what we saw. But we're not interested in that. We're looking at how can we best find an amicable solution that will get normalize the situation there and get the students back to classes and learn. Yeah, but thank you very much. All right, welcome, Honourable Member Manana. Shall we then, we take note of your concern, Honourable Member McLaughlin. All that it says, I think our preparations must be, there must be an improvement in our preparations. And when did we get this presentation? Yesterday. Okay. Okay. let's take responsibility for distributing the latest presentation to yesterday. But then I think in future we will emphasize submission of the presentations 3 days prior to allow members enough time to prepare for the meetings, because it does help in terms of meaningful and constructive engagement. Honourable Member McLaughlin.
Thank you, ma'am. That, with all due respect, that wasn't the problem. I think the first presentation we got was about 4 days ago. Yesterday we got some supplementary information, and we got a final presentation this morning. But you haven't addressed the issue of the letter that was sent to the department. May I ask you again, please may we be given that letter when we get the information, so that we know what the committee has asked the department to do. Otherwise, we're in the dark. We get given information, but we're not sure whether the department's answering what we asked them, unless we can see what the question was. Thank you, ma'am.
Let in the next meeting. Agreed? Agreed. All right. I still want to know, why don't we have members of the portfolio committee from higher education and training, because we haven't received any apology. To me, the aim was to have a joint meeting with them, so that as we engage, they should also be at par in terms of what we decide upon. Yes, Anele.
Thank you, Chair. Most of the members of the committee have apologized for this meeting, Chair. We sent the invitation to all the members on Wednesday. The chairperson is abroad. Most of the members have apologized.
Yes, Honourable Member McLaughlin.
Sorry.
Oh,
we look alike.
You know what? It's Friday today. Please understand that I must get my thinking right now.
Obviously, you know, it's a case of preaching to the converted. We are, yeah. But in future, if we can ask, an apology that they have apologized can't be acceptable. I mean, unless it's an acceptable reason, Honourable Chairperson. So I think that's what should happen, is that maybe a letter should be written from the committee to the chairperson inquiring what the reason for non-attendance at this meeting is. Because an apology, I could have also apologized, but I feel that my job is important here. So for me, it's unacceptable. So.
Okay. Honourable members, I think we're taking note of that, and then we will write a letter to the chairperson asking for a written explanation on why they could not join this meeting this morning, because we want to assist them. It's not about us. It's about them. Okay. Thank you very much. Shall we then move on to item number 3? But I'm sure everybody's okay now. Ready? All right. Shall we then proceed? Well, I will request the Department of Higher Education and Training to give us a presentation on the performance of the CTAS.
Thanks very much, Chairperson. Very good morning to the members of the Standing Committee, as well as colleagues who are here with us. So we will try to be focused as much as we could. And from our side, there will be two other colleagues who will be coming into the presentation later, Mr. Matugama as well as Mr. Lunka. The presentation, as it is, those are the areas, Chairperson, that we'll be focusing on. Overall non-financial performance of the CTAS, detailed discussion into the funding framework for CTAS in 2017, MTF priorities, risk opportunities and challenges in the CTAS system, ensuring value for money, efficiency and effectiveness in CTAS operations, and then discuss the role that CTAS can play in the funding challenge faced by higher education sector. On the first slide, where we start with the introduction, Sector Education and Training Authorities are required to develop a sector skills plans as mandated by the Skills Development Act as well as the National Skills Development Strategy number 3. CETA's expected, of course, to facilitate the delivery of sector-specific interventions that help to achieve the goals of the National Skills Development Strategy. This includes, amongst others, the development of learning programs and monitoring education and skills provision in their various economic sectors. Sector education and training authorities are required to develop, as I've indicated, a skills development plan, as well as to facilitate in the main those interventions that are relevant within that sector. Perhaps you can go to slide number 5. The Department of Higher Education and Training has the responsibility thereof to oversee and monitor the work of CETAs in achieving their predetermined objectives. The performance information that will come later captures the objectives and indicators in terms of the approved annual performance plan as well as a 77 agreement. Then you can move to another slide there. There, as I've indicated, the National Skills Development Strategy 3 is serving 8 goals because that's how we are focusing CETAs in their interventions. So the first goal is institutional mechanism for skills planning. The second one, access to occupational directed programs. Number 3, promoting the growth of active sector. 4, adapt language and numeracy skills to enable additional training. 5, better use of workplace-based skills development. 6, supporting cooperatives, SMEs, NGOs, etc., especially for rural development. Public sector capacity for improved service delivery. 8, building career and vocational guidance. You'll see then, therefore, in the next slide, we're trying to link those very important learning programs to the National Skills Development Strategy 3. That you'll see there, but that is not by order of priority. It's just a coincidence that number 1 on top will be artisan development, followed by learnerships, work integrated learning, and internships, bursaries, skills development programs, small business cooperatives, as I mentioned earlier, and building career and vocational guidance. The next slide, it is just trying to demonstrate the challenge that is faced by the CETAs with regard to workplace-based learning opportunities. As you'll be aware that in the main, as directed by the white paper, CETAs' primary responsibility, amongst others, is to ensure that we link the theory and the practical part. You'll see that we're just trying to demonstrate graduates being produced by our universities for periods 2012, 2013, 2014. And you'll see if you add all that together, I should think in 2014, it will give you in excess of 240,000. So it means, therefore, CETAs will have to are getting involved with regard to your internships, with regard to your work integrated learning, because amongst those graduates, there are those whom it's mandatory before they can acquire their degrees, their diplomas, and the like, that there must be work integrated learning opportunities that have been provided for those students. But then also post qualification, we speak of internships because we must be able to assist them in terms of experience. As we know that the industry there always say that someone with a qualification is not sufficient without experience. So that, amongst others, the responsibility of CETAs. That is why the department is having that stock and not turning each and every workplace into a training space. At the next slide, you'll see as well, because we're dealing with the other one in the universities. In this one, we're dealing with TVETs. Also, the challenges that we are faced with regard to graduate within Tibet sector. You'll see also this is with reference to 2014, that in 2014 our Tibet subsector produced in excess of 55,000 graduates, whether it's at NCV level 4 or N6 is at N3. Also, the expectation there for the CETAs to ensure that we are bridging the theory as well as the world of work. We move to the next slide. A very important area that normally we do not talk that much about it is those who are not in employment, education, and training, normally referring to them as NEETs. The number of South African NEETs has increased from about 2 million in 1996 to close to 3.2 million in 2011, and then of course that number up to date should be in excess of 3.5 million. So NEET rates were 25.1% in 1996, 34% in 2001, and 32.2% in 2014. The department has directed therefore CETAs to increase the workplace-based learning opportunities in various learning programs. You will be aware that especially if you look into NEETs, we do provide, amongst others, a lot of learnerships so that they become engaged. Because those are the young persons who are not in a university, who are not in a college, they are out there and get engaged. Hence, therefore, the department is putting a prime priority to them. Pivotal, this is the language that is being used in the new grant regulations that we introduced on the 1st April 2013. Pivotal, it means therefore, is professional, vocational, technical, and academic learning programs that result in qualification or part qualification on the NQF framework. You'll see that was CETAs before that, they were not paying this particular attention around to Pivotal, those programs leading to part or qualification. Now, since 2013, the minister has introduced the grant regulations to direct them so that we can have a more impact in terms of skills development in the country. Slide number 12 is just a demonstration as well of one of the challenges facing the country. And then I can say members of the Standing Committee at least are very much averse with regard to the National Development Plan, the New Growth Path, Industrial Policy Action Plan, which in the main, all of them, at least there is a consensus in saying the country, the economy has to grow to the level as envisaged in the NDP as well as in the New Growth Path, that we need to pay a particular attention in the academic development in the country. We just taking from 2012, you'll see we have a target and then we have achieved, but I'm not going to get through to all the years, but then in total, if you look into from 2012 up to 2015, our target was to produce 52,110 artisans in the country. We have produced so far 55,282. And then I must say, we must note that the National Development Plan requires us by 2030 to produce 30,000 artisans in the country. And then I can say, as we speak, we're producing on average about 13.5. In the financial year that has ended in March 2016, we produced 16,114. The next slide is also dealing with learnership, as we think I've also indicated, especially with the needs, that amongst others, they are beneficiaries with regard to our learnerships. Also, I'm not going to take you through, but then you see, we're just trying to start from 2013-2014 up until 2015-2016. We're using 2013 and 14 because it's the year that we have introduced new grant regulations which are forecasting CETAs into a particular direction. Then you will see in total for these three financial years that our target was 240,000. We have managed to produce 247,802 learners who completed their learnerships. You'll see also benefits are quite very huge with regard to learnerships as well as apprenticeships in terms of absorption by the industry. the last one there, not the last one, slide number 14 is dealing with the internships. I've also indicated earlier about graduates who are produced by our universities in 2014, about 180 or in excess of 180,000 and 55,000 in our TVET subsector. And you'll see, therefore, the role that is being played by internship was immediately when they complete their degrees, their diplomas, and we must, as a department, intervene with regard to internships. Then you can see in this area, from 2013-2014 and up until 2015-2016, we have not done that quite very well in this particular area. But then, of course, in terms of our service level agreement with CETAs, we're trying to focus them very much in this area. Because it means, therefore, that in excess of 240,000 university graduates as well as TVET graduates, it means, therefore, our interventions must be targeting them. Slide number 15, this one is bursaries, and you'll be aware that since we introduced these new grant regulations in 2013, we directed, amongst others, as part of pivotal CETAs to bursaries. And I can rest assured the committee that the consumers, big consumers of the bursaries from CETAs are our universities, public universities, and then, of course, to an extent, our TVET sector. What we do normally as well, on top of this, we also work with the NSFAS, whereby each and every CETA is having a service level agreement with that particular, with the NSFAS, to assist with regard to batteries. In the main, for the sectors that the CETAs are operating within. So I'm not going to go through in detail as well in this one, but then you can see in this slide, if you look into 2013-14, our target there was 17,000, just about 17,000. Our achievement was 19,551. And then the total by the end of the financial year, which has ended 31st March 2016, you'll see there the target was 56,000 for those who are beneficiaries in terms of bursaries from CETAs. And then you see the achievement there is 67,958. You can just say mostly the consumers of these bursaries are our universities. I will give to my colleague, Mr. Matsudama, then to continue with the funding framework for CETAS and 2017 MTR.
Thank you, Chair. As you would know, the Skills Levies Act was also passed along with the Skills Development Act, mainly to provide funding for the implementation of the Skills Development Act. And that is determined on the basis of the employer's salary bill to the extent that they have a salary bill of above 500,000 a year. The public service is excluded, specifically the national and provincial governments, and they are also expected anyway to put aside the 1% in order to focus on the skills and training of their employees per the budget of that particular department. The next slide talks to the breakdown of the full levy that the department receives. If we take 100 rands, for instance, 80 rands of that would go to the CETAs, all 21 CETAs, and 20 rands of that would go to the National Skills Fund. Of the 80 rands received by the CETAs, it is subdivided into what is called discretionary grants, which is 49.5%, the mandatory 20%, and the admin. That mandatory is what gets returned to the employers on submission of correct reports, your annual training reports, and also your workplace-based the training initiatives that are planned by the employer concerned. The discretionary grant, one of the things that got introduced by the grant regulation is to limit this what we refer to as discretion in the utilization of this discretionary grant through the introduction of a pivotal grant, which Mr. Mbalo has made reference to.
which now focuses on building skills that are most required in the country by providing proper training that talks to professionals, that talks to most of what would be offered in most of our universities. And 20% of that then becomes the discretion that the CITAS have to address sector-specific needs during a year concern. 0.5% of the admin that is allocated to CITAS goes to the QCTO. As you would know, QCTO is an institution established in terms of the Skills Development Act, and part of its work is to ensure that the quality assurance and curriculum matters are dealt with on an ongoing basis, and those impact directly on occupational programs that the CITAS have to promote. The 20% of the NSF, most 18 rands of that 20 rands would go towards the mandate given to the National Skills Fund in terms of the Skills Development Act, expanded also in the National Skills Development Strategy. Also, 2% of that would go, what we call 2 rands of that would go to administration, which is SAS. The turning of the workplace into the training space, as Mr. Barlow has indicated, requires of this pivotal grant, which is 80% of that discretionary, to focus a lot on most of the students leaving the TVET system and also the University of Technology system, enabling them to get the practice that will ensure that they get full qualification of what they have undertaken in an institution of learning. The surpluses that were transferred to the national, this same regulation spoke as well to the need for the CITAS not to keep any surpluses going forward, because money is meant for training. And this regulation brought about a need for transfer of such surpluses to the National Skills Fund, not for the use by the National Skills Fund, but to meet broad post-school education and training financial needs. Hence, in the current year, 1.6 billion of those surpluses had to meet the obligation with respect to the fees must fall. Going to the next slide, that slide basically gives us an indication of how much the CITAS have been receiving since 2012-13 financial year up to the projections of 2018-2019. And as you would see, the CITAS at some stage were receiving in total just over 5 billion rands, and the projections to 2018-19 are as far as just under 20 billion rands. Going to the next slide, the levy grant regulations. In this slide, what we are indicating is the levies that we receive directly from the from SARS. And the total in this case, starting from 2012 all the way to the projections of 2020, what would go to the National Skills Fund and also what would go to the CITAS. In this case, here the example given, or not the example, the exact figures given in respect of 2011-12, it's 10 billion, with 2 billion of that going to the National Skills Fund and 8 billion going to the CITAS. But the figures are quite cramped, but there is a base data from which the graph itself was prepared. Then going to the next slide, that one talks about the breakdown now in terms of the programs that the CITAS have to spend the money on. Your administration, your pivotal, your mandatory grants, and also the discretionary grants. And also, in this case, the funds that the NSF would have received are not included. It only talks to the 8 billion. If we look, for instance, at year 2011-12, it talks about the amount that would have gone to the CETAs and also how it was used at the program areas of the different CETAs. Now, going to the last two slides in my presentation, the actual expenditure here versus the budget, in the two previous slides, it's talking specifically about the levies that are received. We would budget to receive so much from the SARS and we'll receive actual of so much. But also in terms of now doing the work on the plans, the threat plans, the APPs, you have to give an indication of how much are you going to budgeting as a CETA and how much eventually you end up spending as would be audited at the end of the financial year. In this case, for administration, for mandatory, and for discretionary, in those different years, CETAs had budgeted a total over 10 billion in 2013-14, but used 7.6 billion. And in 2014-15, we can see they budgeted 12, and the usage was at 9 billion. And 2015-16, the budget was at 12, but the usage was at 11 billion rands. You would also notice that in these years, compared to the actual levies that are being received, there is now an increase or over-budgeting by the CETAs in respect of the monies that they actually receive. That being a way through which the surpluses that the CETAs had in the past were now being utilized. So in that way, that has led effectively to a situation where, at this point in time, if there is any surpluses, there wouldn't be more than 50 million in the entire system of CETAs. Now, the last table expresses the information that is in the table above, which basically gives us what the CETAs had budgeted for and also what they actually spent in the respective years 2013-14, 14-15, and 2015-16.
We're going to talk, Chair, on the priorities that have been given to the CETAs, but the mandate for the CETAs is derived in the main from Skills Development Act and NSTS 3, which directs CETAs to develop sector skills plan for every economic sector every year. Now, as a department responsible for the oversight of the CETAs, we have developed a framework which gives the content and the structure, which guide the content and the structure of the sector skills plan. Now, in the sector skills plan, CETAs are required to present the profile of the sector, indicate the skills demand and supply, and signal and outline the mechanism to respond to the demand signals by setting out key skills priorities of a specific financial year. Now, those priorities by the CETAs are presented to the department in the form of pivotal program that Mr. Mvalo spoke about, which is submitted to the department every year as an extra to the SSP annually. Now, go down, okay? And these priorities are not thumbs-up, but rather are informed by the stakeholders, as well as the national priorities that CETAs are required to indicate the intervention in relation to these priorities. But key of these priorities is in the CETA pivotal list, which, with your permission, Chair, if you want, we'll share at a later stage so that you know what pivotal list that we're talking about. But the main focus is on artisan, and I think Mr. Mvalo spoke about the National Development Plan, which requires CETAs by 2030 to produce 30,000. But it's important because this is one of the niche areas of skills development, the artisan development, and the cost that goes along with the production of this artisan. Because in the 2013-2014, the number that we achieved in that year, we had to buy that number by an amount of about 2 billion rand. And in 2014-15, the amount spent on artisan development is to the tune of 2.5 billion rand. Now, it's not only focusing on the artisan development, but also some sectors require some kind of entry-level and intermediary skills. Now, because of the importance and the priorities of CETAS, the minister has instructed all the CETAS to establish offices in the TVET colleges, because you can't produce artisans if you don't come close to the TVET colleges. And currently, CETAS are occupying offices in TVET colleges so that they are able to facilitate the work-integrated learning of those learners and assist in the accreditation and also assist in the review of the curriculum of the college system. Now, the partnerships are very critical, the issue of research. But let's come to the issues which also were requested to look at. But it's important, Chair, with your permission, to talk about the relicensing of the CETAS so that we understand the context of where we are in terms of the life of the CETAS. So the CETAS life was supposed to have come to an end in March, and the minister then extended the life of the CETAS for a period of time of 2 years, so that there's a proposal of a new CETAS landscape, which is going to give direction in terms of what CETAS should look like post 2018. But in this document, there are risks and there are opportunities and challenges that we are identifying. That document has not been concluded. I think we'll inform the members once it is concluded. But let me quickly take you through the risks which we have already identified as a department in that proposal. And it is the issue of the uniformity in the CETAS operations. Because you have got 21 CETAS and each CETAS has got its own system. Now, we have identified that as a problem, which we think it needs to be addressed, because you can't have 21 systems operating in 21 CETAS. So. And again, Chair, you spoke about reducing CETAS, and we have not come to that conclusion. But I think the point is managing 21 CETAS also it presents some challenges. And therefore, in the new proposal, we're talking about streamlining of the system so that it becomes easy to the external stakeholders. And also the issue of the linkage and the white paper, I'll talk about that in the next slide. Because if then the CETAS are not integrated to the entire PSET system, then that could be a risk. But in the document that we are proposing, we speak much of that. Okay, but what are the opportunities? The fact that CETAS are no longer under the Department of Labor but are part of the Department of Higher Education and Training, we think that this is an opportunity to address most of the problems that are experienced by the PSET system. Above all, the white paper for post-school education presents us with a golden opportunity, because CETAS are seen as the facilitators or as an intermediaries between higher education and training system and the workplace. And therefore, their role is to enable all the players, your labor market players and education institutions, to speak with one voice. And the bridging of the divide between the responsiveness and access, quality of provision and education and training. But most importantly, we see this as an opportunity, because now that we have got all these subsystems, your CETAS and your higher education and training institutions in one department, then it's going to present an opportunity for us to see the complementarity between the levy grant system and the voted fund. And in the proposal, we're trying to elucidate this a bit further, because Mr. Mvalo spoke about some students who are doing engineering and some programs that requires work-integrated learning. And often in the past, you would see that there would be students who, before they graduate, they would need to be placed in the world of work. But because there's no facilitation, so they would not complete their qualification. So now we say, this money, we're not necessarily saying that it must not be spent on university, but the primary role of skills development levy is to ensure that these students are exposed to the workplace environment. So we see then this as an opportunity that whatever is spent by through fiscals in the universities or TVET colleges, and it must be complemented by the skills levy in the form of these artisan learnership, etc. Now, the other opportunity which we view also, I think we talk about it in the proposal, is the National Development Plan, the New Growth Path, and EPAP and Operation PAGISA. These are new programs of the department which we view that streamlining the status is going to assist a great deal. Now, the other issue which then we think that is an opportunity is the prioritization of the occupations in high demand. Now, we do know now that the country needs artisans more than ever before. So we're proposing a different mechanism of funding this artisan development. But having said that, we want to indicate some of the challenges within the system, which we think that the engagement that we have with all the partners in the 2 years, we'll have to address these challenges. The capacity and the resourcing among the sitters. And sitters are at various performance level. There are very good sitters that are doing a very good work. But obviously there are sitters which have got serious challenges which we are addressing. Now, the issue of governance is something that we have identified, which we're trying to address. Now, the role of government departments, we think that it is a bit problematic in the sitter boards if they continue to be excluded, because part of the priorities of government are emanating from government departments. But if government departments do not form part and parcel of the board that take decision in the disbursement of levies, we think that we might have some serious problems. So we're thinking of proposing the stronger involvement of government departments within the setup board, so that whatever each government department is identifying as a priority is addressed through the sector skills plan. Now, poor planning, that one is still a challenge, but there's something that we are doing, and shifting from quantitative to qualitative focus, and we're seeing some fruit, because sitters now are beginning to do well, because the grant regulations that Mr. Mfalo spoke about are beginning to focus the sitters, to focus not on short skills program now, but on programs that lead to part or full qualifications. Now, well, the other challenges... The other challenge is, which we still experience, is the negative public perception about sitters. That one is a problem. And, well, as people who are working close to the sitters are doing good, but there are sitters who are tarnishing the image of the sitters. But we think that is a problem, and other people are calling for the shutting down of the sitters. And as a department, we're not of the view that they need to be shut down. Now, the difficulties in addressing cross-sectoral skills development needs and the growth of the economy, and also it is a challenge because most of the training or occupationally directed training is done at the workplace. Now, if you take sitters like MQA, because mines are being closed down, now you have got a challenge of MQA, because MQA still needs to place some of the learners in the mining industry. So the shrinking of that industry is beginning to give a challenge. Well, our engagement with some sitters, particularly the public service sitters, they indicating the problem of the exemption of government departments from paying levy to the sitters. So we think that it's a problem. Whether it's going to be addressed in the new proposal, we're not sure, because those are the engagement that we'll deal with National Treasury. Because the 1% by government departments is not paid to any sitter but is retained by government departments, now it becomes very difficult for us as a department to monitor whether that money is spent appropriate or is spent on actual training. And we think that that one is a challenge. But now let's look at the value for money, because we are requested to look at that. Now, we are the first one to admit that before 2013, sitters were focusing on certain programs in a particular NQF level, but the introduction of grant regulation in 2013 focused the sitters on more of the pivotal program. 80% of what is termed discretionary grant is spent on learning programs like bursaries, your artisan development and learnership. Now, we have tightened up the service level agreement with the sitters to ensure that we monitor them every quarter, and we set targets with them. Well, the auditing of the sitters, and I think in as much as there are some challenges, but gradually we're seeing some improvement on governance or good corporate governance. Now, the growing number of sitters that are getting clean audit is encouraging, because in the previous financial year, only 3 sitters get qualification, but from last year to this to the past year, 15-16, so sitters that got clean audit moved from 6 to 10 out of 21 sitters. Now, we have also appointed, Minister has appointed the review panel to review the sitters APP annual report, and that panel is doing a good job to assist us in terms of triangulating our own finding. What are the sitters' role in funding, in the funding challenges faced by higher education sector? That was the question also that was asked from us, and I've spoken about the grant regulations, and I'm not going to repeat that, but important to note that towards pivotal programs, which include bursaries, sitters have spent a significant amount of money. I think in Balo's presentation, he indicated the amount of money that has been spent on bursary. But not only bursary, because I think our approach is that you should not only be giving bursaries to students in higher education and training institutions, because you can give bursary, but if you do not assist them to get their qualifications, that bursary is going to be meaningless. Because what the sitters are doing, if they are providing a bursary to a student that is doing engineering, then that student will still require to get work integrated learning, and the sitters are playing that particular role. But even post qualifications, that students, for them to be employable, also would be given some kind of internship. So this is the role that the sitters are playing in higher education. In the financial year 2013-14, after grant regulation we introduced, sitters assisted about 19,551 learners in universities and colleges, in line with their targets. And I think that number has increased. Mr. Mvalo spoke about that. Now, sitters are directed to assist workplace-based learning opportunities for learners from universities and colleges, linking them with industry, some to complete their qualification or workplace experience to address the skills demand. That's where our story ends, Chair. Thank you very much.
Let me thank you so much for the presentation. Honourable members, we have been listening to an interesting and insightful presentation. I'm now going to open for a discussion. Honourable Member Ima.
Thank you, Chair. Allow me to apologize for my late coming. I had a media briefing. But let me thank the members for the presentation. I'm just going to start. I came in late, but I'm just going to start. The problem we seem to have is just that these TVET colleges and things are not addressing the challenges or the needs, the skills needs of the country. Clearly it is not. And for that reason you can see that we are importing skills from Cuba and everywhere else. So I want to know the rationale behind spending all these monies and not addressing, the actual needs, and that is what my understanding is, that the purpose of the system. The other thing is this, especially with the TVET colleges, we had some shocking results in terms of that there's only 1 in 10 that actually go through and actually complete their courses, which is shocking. That is the latest steps that we have. So, again, I want to know, how is your what you're doing, how is it impacting positively, because 1 in 10 are only completing those courses. So, if you can perhaps just give me an idea there. There seems to be always negative findings by the Auditor General, and I want to also acknowledge the progress that is being made. You understand, but I find repeatedly the emphasis seems to be on spending rather than on quality. You know, the output that you get is not in line with the monies that we spend. So I don't know, for me, maybe we need to start changing direction. We should be looking at that we're getting value for money for what we are spending. What it was intended for is the impact that was it. And clearly, you know, spending 99% or 100% of your money for me means nothing if it has not really created any positive. You do know that specifically issues like artisans, plumbers, electricians, run forgotten, gone. There's nothing. Believe me, anybody that's doing it now is somebody who's working for somebody and picking it up, but nobody wants to go and do that. Now the question is, what is the purpose of sending everybody to go and do business management and BCom degrees, and the country is sitting with a problem with the rest of it? So I want you to tell us what you can do. And also whether we're looking specifically, because we have a problem, in my view, in terms of local government problem, in the kind of people we're attracting, you know, with really not with the skills. And I don't know specifically if you're addressing something like that, you know, in our colleges and universities. Let me just see. I don't know, if you're going to elaborate on what is the need for there to be so many different systems. I know you said there are challenges there, which you've reached a technology, which is good. But I can't understand the rationale behind that. You know, what was it, what is the purpose of it in the first place? I mean, so, it is, I've got that there. You said you're experiencing, sir, there are problems that are being experienced in, at workplace where with employees not opening up. Maybe you should tell us, what have you recommended? Who have you spoken to? What do you feel is the way forward? What should we put in place to try and get greater collaboration and input and acceptance from these people? I'll stop there for now, Chair. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honourable Member Iman. Honourable Member Sinukwanyane.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair, and thank you very much for the presentation. I would like to just start by just raising my confusion, maybe, with the, you know, with your slides. It would be nice if you put, particularly if I look at the slide number 19, at the end of it, all I heard you, but I didn't hear you. Because there is no text that actually just speaks to the, yeah, if you could just try and get some text to tell us what it is. I tried to actually link it with slide number 23 a little bit, because I saw those words, but it's just by way of commenting. And then the, in terms of the very slide number 23, I think where you've got the expenditure versus the budget, my question would be, besides the fact that they spend so much, they've underspent, but is the actual performance satisfactory, or besides the fact that they've underspent? Then the next one question is, looking at all these challenges and all the things that you've raised, the issue of quality, is there a mechanism, a structured mechanism for measuring quality or monitoring the sitters? Because it just makes you suspicious that there isn't really a proper system. More so that you've also mentioned that different sitters have got different systems and processes that they carry out. Were there any criteria then or conditions put in place in order to be able to monitor whether or not people are doing the right thing, for them to get into the system? How, did they just apply and approve, or are there real structured conditions for their admission to the system? Because that would help quite a lot. Then maybe the last thing is just by way of commenting again, in terms of this public perception, negative public perceptions, these perceptions are really, really rife. And I'm also one of those people in the public that have got an opinion about them because of the observations on the ground. Some of the products from these sitters are just not on. I've actually even had an experience where somebody was brought to in my other life to my department to get some practical experience. And the person, you know, one had to actually teach the theory as well because the person just doesn't seem to understand a lot of things. So in terms of quality assurance, I think that is one area that's really lacking. And I've got another typical example of somebody who went through a sitter. He hasn't been employed for a long time. Are they employable after going through the sitters? Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Member Smukwanyana. Thanks for your intervention. I have Honourable Member Manana to be followed by Dr. Fick.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Let me also join those who welcome the presentation. I have 2 points of clarity, but it seems as if they're on the same page. Under challenges, slide number 31, and also on the ensuring value for money, also on slide 31, you need to do your numbering very correctly. Okay, let's come to these challenges. You have indicated that there are those sitters who are doing very well and those who are not doing very well. And if you can provide this committee with those sitters so that we know exactly what are we talking about, because the perception as of now, it seems as if all of them, they are bad. But if we can name and shame those who are doing very bad, so that the ones that are doing good work, they can be known also. Under the ensuring value for money, it seems as if the clean audit is far from this sitters to reach it. Also, we need to have the names of those sitters that are not doing very well, who are not getting clean audit. We need to know who are, what are they getting, whether adverse or unqualified or what is it, so that we know exactly what are we talking about, so that we can lump them all with one bad name.
Thanks, Honourable Chairperson. Just a few comments on the presentation. Slides number 12, 13 and 14 together, they indicate separate information, but interventions, firstly with regards to artists in development and learnerships, they all indicate targets. I just have a question. Those targets, on what are they based? In other words, would the, once you've completed the artists in training and learnerships, would there be placement, are they being trained for the economy? In other words, how are those identified, those targets? Sorry, Chair, I have to take an important call, sorry.
So I'll carry on in the meantime. Thank you, ma'am. Thank you for the presentation. I think probably what I have to say might echo what's been said to an extent already, but I've just had a quick read of the request that was sent to you by our chairperson, so I'm now a little bit more on board. So given the request that was sent to you, I would have liked to have seen something that set out, sitter per sitter, for 21 of them, saying, this sitter, this is the money they received, this is what they've done with it, they're performing or they're not performing. Something along those lines, so that we've got a better idea of, per sitter, what's happening there. Is it achieving its goal? Is it using the money effectively? Is money going missing? Is it just being wasted? Are we not getting a proper result? That's the sort of information I would have liked to have. You've been very general, and maybe with good reason, perhaps, but I would have liked some more specific kind of information per CETA that you're dealing with. Okay, there are 21 of them. We're told that we've got up now to 10 of them have clean audits. Well, that means there are 21 without clean audits. How bad are those audits? Are they qualified audits? Are they disclaimers? What are they? You're not telling us the bad news. You're just giving us the good news there. On slide 5, in your introduction, you give us that what CETAs must do, so specific plans and all this thing. I want to hear from you, are they fulfilling their need? Now, these were set up for a very specific reason, because there was perceived to be a need in our economy for this kind of training, for this kind of intervention, for skills transfer. And are they fulfilling that need, and if so, at what cost? I don't just mean in the general sense what it cost us so many billion rand to run it. I'll get a bit more specific shortly. On slide 9, university graduates per annum, you say there, a total of 240,000 graduates over these 3 years. I would like to know how many of those 240,000 are employed, and what was the cost per graduate to achieve a graduation? Do we have any idea of that? Because that gives us a better idea of what we're looking at when it comes to university graduates. What does it cost us per graduate to get a university degree? What does it cost? The next slide says technical and vocational educational training. I presume these are graduates of TVET colleges. But in the same period, we get 55,000 of them as opposed to 240,000 university graduates. That's a ratio of nearly 1 to 5. Do we really need only one technical person for every 5 graduates? Shouldn't it be the other way around? It seems to me to be at this juncture here that our focus is in the wrong area, perhaps. I don't know, but surely you've done that kind of exercise, haven't you? Run some kind of survey to find out what the real need is. Do we need so many university graduates as opposed to so few TVET graduates? It just seems to me that, once again, and of those 55,000, how many are employed? Do we know? On slide 12, I notice for the years 2014 and 2012, we achieved way ahead of the targets. And then in the next year, in both instances, it goes the other way around. Do you have any idea what caused that difference? Because if I just look, for example, at 2014, your target is 12,000, we achieve 18,000. And then that's an incredible rate of achievement because it's 50% up. Then in the next year, you increase the target from 12,000 to 20,000, but now we only achieve 16,000, not even as much as we achieved when the target was less. Well, what causes that? Have you any idea what happened there? Because something changed, something went wrong in that period, obviously, because we went from having a wonderful result to having a result that really doesn't cut it. And then if you could just explain to me, I'm a layperson, I'm not well versed in the terms you use, but what is the difference between a learnership and an internship? What sort of periods do these cover? I know they're all workplace-based things, but just explain to us what it actually is. What does it mean, a learnership as opposed to an internship? Your next slide speaks of bursaries. I just want to know, are these bursaries in the normal sense? Do they have to be repaid? Or do people work in the time that they've had the bursary for? How does that actually operate? If you could give us some idea on that, please. Just with reference to slide 25, this is now your system priorities. I just wanted to know, do you do any kind of survey to find out the result? Is it a fit-for-purpose result? The graduates you're getting, whether they've gone through a CETA or a TVET college or whatever it is, are they being readily absorbed into the economy? Do the potential employers seek them out? Do they want them? Are these guys good to have? Or have you got to take them on and then you've got to go through another process to train them and teach them before they're actually useful to the people? What is the kind of situation there? Maybe you could assist me in that. Thank you, Chair. I think that's all I have for now.
Thank you, Honourable.
attention. Honorable Member Dr. Fick, I will allow you to complete your...
My apologies, I'll explain to you once I've completed why I had to go out, okay? Chair, okay, let me just go back to 12, 13 and 14. I just wanted to know the slides, the targets, are they based on specific disciplines, on specific trades? How are those targets arrived at, and obvious, and does it meet the needs of the economy? On slide number 24, I just want clarification here. I'm assuming, and it seems as though that those pink that graphical representation there, it seems that those pink, oh sorry, mauve, they are based on the table above, and then there's a breakdown of how those totals are arrived at. But it would be useful if those figures could be given. In other words, the figure for admin, mandatory, and discretionary. I'm not saying you must give it now, but it would be useful to know what those figures are, because we're given the totals. But you know, just the no, I apologize. Sorry, I apologize. It's there. I'm sorry. Okay, I withdraw that. Page 26. This is it's stated here that the and you said in the presentation you can't produce artisans if you don't get close to the TVET colleges, and I agree with that. But then my question then is that, given the history of the CETAs, do we really need CETAs? Because in that case, you can just as well have a TVET college for every discipline, because there's 21 CETAs for every different sector. So if they are so close to the TVET college, why do you need the CETA? Okay. And then slide number 28. No, sorry, I've dealt with that. And then the last one, Honorable Chair, slide number, the first slide number 32. I just think there's a correction then. Sorry, the second one. The first bullet point says 80% of 49.05. I think that should actually be 49.5%. Can I just make sure that that is a correction there? The figure there, the first bullet, is 80% of 49.05%, because on the previous slide, which I think is, allow me to, if you don't mind, just I'll try and get to it, that fancy one there. Yeah, on slide number 19, you indicate there that it's 49.5%. So I just want to make sure that it's the same information that's been recorded there. Thank you.
Done.
Okay.
Thank you so much. We now on Honorable Member Shoppes Tole.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and thanks for the presentation. I think it's important to introduce myself. My name is Sheila. I grew up in a rural place, Mwamitwa, and I got married in Bushbuckridge, it's rural. I just want to know if you have got any business in those rural places. That is the first, because I really don't know about you. And the second question is, who are the CETAs? I need a list. You know, as a rural woman, I need to know clearly. But the last one is, you know, I've got a lot of support in this committee, and my aim is to mobilize my colleagues here that we just get rid of the CETAs. And can you give me a reason, motivation, why you should not be integrated into the department itself so we can save costs? Because times are tough, eh? We need to do things differently. And you see, I hold a strong view, because I don't know you. I don't know what you have been doing. I don't know if any rural person benefits. It's up to you. Thank you.
Thank you very much, honourable members, for all your relevant questions. I will now hand over to the department, to the officials of the Department of Fire Education and Training, to respond. Who is the leader of the delegation? Okay.
Thanks very much, Chairperson, and so dearly to honorable members of our Eastern Committee.
If you can introduce yourself so that they also know who you are, like just following on the example of honorable member Shope.
My name is Zukile Christopher Moses Bafomvalo. I'm the Deputy Director General Skills Development in the Department of Higher Education and Training, 123 Francis Bus Street in Pretoria. That should be excessive, Chairperson. Thanks very much, Chairperson. Chairperson, firstly, we really appreciate the questions that are coming to us as a department, and some of them, of course, are making us to be very much more awake and alive in the work that we are involved with as a department. I know in this area as to whether our graduates are employable. It's I know there is a lot of work that has been done. University of Stellenbosch released also its own work with regard to the employability of graduates in the country who are produced by our universities. But then allow me, Chair, to share the information from Stats SA with regard to employability of graduates. There was the study that was done by the state essay, which was comparing years 2009 and 2014. As you know that the more you have a qualification, indications are that the better the chances of getting employment. I'm just going to be specific. In 2009, in this information from state essay, indicates to us those with less metric in 2009, that was 57% were not employed. Less metric, not employed. Then if we go to 2014, the number was still standing at 57%. Now I know the STEM SA always say to us, they provide us with the information, what do we do with this information, it's something else. Now, if we're just looking into this, it tells us that you must focus into those with less metric in terms of interventions. Okay, I go to those with metrics. In 2009, those who were unemployed, the percent was 37% with metric now, your grade 12. And then in 2014, that was at 38%, those who were unemployed. So as we ascend in education, you see we're starting to see that more education is getting better employment opportunities. And then we move to graduates. And also it's very interesting. And this confirms the work that has been done by other various researchers across the country. I've also mentioned earlier on the one of the University of Stellenbosch. They are saying to us, in 2009, there was 1% of graduates who were unemployed in 2009. And that number, we go again to 2014, it tells us 1% of those who are unemployed with graduates are those with degrees from our universities. So something tells us, therefore, that if you look into the sector, especially universities, the more you're getting educated, the more you get employment or you get recognized by the industry. And then those with other tertiary qualifications, in 2009, that percent was at 5%. And it tells us, therefore, 5%, those other tertiary qualifications. So that will, in our interpretation, include the colleges. And then in 2014, that number was at 4%. So simple, this is telling us that there is a value for education. So that is why, therefore, we are saying all those who are not in universities, in colleges, and the like, we must pay a particular attention to them as well. I just want also the members, they were asking about if you look into the work that is being done by CITAS, especially your learnerships as well as your artisans. We have done some work with regard to this area because also to us the impact is something that we should be focusing on as to whether what we are producing in our system, are we impacting? So there is that value for money. Also, just to share something in one of the sectors here, this is Fiber Processing and Manufacturing Sector Education and Training Authority. This CETA, they've undertaken a study, impact study. They were looking into both learnerships as well as apprenticeships. We know apprenticeship is something that is leading to an artisan. So they are saying to us in this study that was done independently, they have divided into various sectors within this CETA. They're saying employed at the start of the learnership in the clothing industry, the percent was at 35% at the start of the learnership. I know there was a question as well to explain as to what is learnership. A learnership is that learning program which includes both the theory and the practical part. 70% is a workplace based learning, and 30% is theoretical learning. It could be in a college, and it could be in a university, leading into a qualification. Then I'm just looking into the impact in this CETA. We have not gone to all other CETAs. Okay, at the start of this learnership, employment was at 35%. Currently employed, meaning we post, therefore, learnership 70%. The number is quite very huge. You'll see the deficit there is 35%. Meaning which therefore that city has managed to improve the lives of about 35% of those who are participating in addition to that learnership. Also in the forestry, those who are participating in the learnership in the forestry, we see as well that there was also increase in terms of absorption. Also in the furniture, a subsector of that CETA, we see also there was a huge improvement in terms of absorption by 16%. And also go to the textile subsector within that CETA, then the improvement from at the start and at the last, we see it was up to 61%. So it tells therefore the Chairperson that, mind you, because if we are saying those with less grade 12 and those with grade 12 who in the main are beneficiaries here, it means we are making impact in that particular area. Because we're saying universities, colleges, at least there are more chances of being absorbed. Now we're focusing to those who are out there and those who are not in education, employment, and or training. And it's interesting because what they are saying, more than 73% of employers in this particular sector, your fiber processing and manufacturing sector, more than 73% employers agreed with the survey that learnership improves learners' knowledge of the industry, which in turn improves employability chances. So it's just on the impact. Then on the apprenticeships, the area that we are saying also the country must pay particular attention into, that is apprenticeships leading, of course, to an artisan. The same CETA done an impact study, both targeting the printing and the packaging subsystems within that sector. They are saying, for example, in printing, at the start of the apprenticeship, that is leading to an artisan, employment was at 56%. Currently employed post now apprenticeship program, it means someone now received a trade test certificate that has qualified that particular learner into that sector of printing. They're saying 85%. So it means, therefore, there was an improvement of about 29% just in that area. I'm just trying to make some few examples, Chairperson, with regard to the part of the impact. And this impact, in the main, is impacting on those ones who have not completed their grade 12s, those ones with grade 12s, which are hugely unemployed out there. And also, the Human Sciences Research Council, in 2010, undertook also a study that was also to look to the impact of both the learnerships as well as the impact of apprenticeships. There also that was confirmed to say those who have participated in a learnership, about 86% of them were absorbed in completion of a learnership. And those who are participating in apprenticeships, 76% of them were then absorbed post apprenticeship. This is telling us because if you go to those Germanic countries whereby there is a focus on apprenticeships, there is a focus in apprenticeships in the main, you'll see that the rate of unemployment of young persons there is quite very low. So that is why, therefore, we're making it fashionable as the country to pay a particular attention around the area of artisan development. And I must share with the committee those trades that are trending, if I were to use that language, or those trades that are in demand if you look into artisan development in the country. I know the question was, how do we come up with these numbers, and how do we ensure that we are targeting those trades that are required by the economy? Of course, you look into all 21 sectors. There is a process for them up until developing that list. We say is a pivotal list. They will come up with a list with their scarce and critical skills. And then we're saying to them, okay, fine, when you're undertaking this exercise, you must work with the credible research institutions so that when you're identifying skills or occupations that are required by that particular sector, whether it's your manufacturing and engineering, etc., you must work with a reputable institution so that the information that is going to inform your sector skills plans, that is going to tell us the top occupations or the top skills that are required by manufacturing, sector, and engineering is well researched. And fortunately, I must say, employers, they do participate. You know that the CETA will sit there and just punch numbers. They must, Mr. Lumka was saying, with developing those sector skills plan frameworks, whereby we're guiding CETAs to say, this is how you should be conducting yourself, including when you're identifying these skills, these occupations, you must be able to speak to employers in that particular sector, and you have to check that. If we just look on these trades, for the past financial year, we see that electrician was number one, leading in numbers in terms of all those who were participating in our trades, followed by the boilermaker, by the welders, by the plumbers, by the diesel mechanics, fitter and tenor, motor mechanics, rigging, refrigeration mechanic, bricklayer. And surely, the members of the state of the committee will confirm to say this is what is required. Because even if you read the new growth path, the industrial policy plan action, if you read the NDP, it will be telling us that these are the trades as the country we must be focusing on. And we're happy that the level of interest also is very much high with regard to these particular areas. Okay. I know this one, okay, I've explained on the absorption of graduates. The other one on the bursaries as to whether they are paid or there are conditionalities. If someone completes his or her studies, maybe was doing BCom, sponsored by the CETA within the insurance sector. Because we are saying these are the skills that are required in particular in that sector. We do not say it's not alone is a bursary. It means, therefore, you get a bursary, it's to assist you to complete your program. If it's a 3, it's a 4-year, so you are not paying back that money. The difference between learnership and internship, I've explained the learnership one. The internship is the one whereby someone has concluded or completed that particular qualification, whether you were doing business management, you were doing marketing, you were doing engineering. Then post-qualification, then we assist with regard to internship. It means, therefore, someone gets now that workplace experience so that you can increase the opportunities of that person being employable. Another one was saying there was this down spiral with regard to CETA, that was on slide 12, as to why the number was high in another year and then in the following year went down. I must confess, it's an area that we said with the colleagues, especially those who are working at Indlela, where we are training our artisans, that we need to do a thorough research on that area as to what were the factors. If you produced that high number in this year and the following year you're producing less, and then we need to go back and to look, in fact, because my argument was saying, let's go to those sectors because we know it's an engineering and a manufacturing sector, and maybe whereby the numbers were high and numbers went down. And Mr. Lunga was saying just next to me, also if you look into the growth of the economy, it has impact in workplaces. You might be having more numbers of artisans in the mining sector, but then of course, if the economy is not growing and then you are closing down of the down some of the mines, it means that is going to have impact in terms of placing your artisans or placing your learners within the mining sector. Oh yes, my colleague is saying also we had that 2010 World Cup whereby there was a lot of investment around stadiums in the country and all other. Also it could be, but we have not yet done as our scientific study, something that we are saying could possibly be some of those factors. There was also a question as to whether CETAs are performing their work. I should think I tried here to give the impact, but members of the committee, please bear with us. We are not saying all CETAs are doing well, so that must be on record. Not all CETAs are doing well. There are CETAs that are doing well. We do have information on the CETAs which got qualified, unqualified, as well as clean audit. We do have that information, and also we'll be able to share with the committee, of course. And then we're saying we are impressed, because if you are seeing the upsurge in terms of the clean audit, now we're getting 10 out of 21. We know we're coming from zero. There was almost nothing in the past with the clean audit. At least now there is an upside. It means, therefore, that the interventions that are there to an extent are working. And we said earlier on that in 2013, we introduced this grant, this new grant regulation, which also tightened the focus of CETAs. We know before, I know my colleague next to me will always make an example of a CETA training someone on emotional intelligence. That program is a week, and then is paid about 40,000. It's about 40,000. It's a week program, and then you see it's equal to MBA. And then when we introduced grant regulations in 2013, now we directed them, so we're closely monitoring them. We are having service level agreements that we are signing between us as well as the CETAs. And on a quarterly basis, we are monitoring. But we are not saying because we are monitoring them on a quarterly basis and therefore things are going well. No, not that things are going well, but in some of the CETAs are doing well. I saw the clean audit we said for the financial year that has ended March 2016-31. Those who received clean audit were 10, and then those who received unqualified were 8, and those who received qualified were 3. So it tells there is something that we are trying to do, but then of course we need to climb this mountain going forward. Hence, therefore, Mr. Lumka was saying, we're having that opportunity now as the system also, as we're busy revising both the National Skills Development Strategy 3 as well as the CETA landscape, so that the lessons that we have learned, especially since the establishment of the department in 2009, we can be able to ensure that we're factoring them going forward. And I normally say, during that time, we did not have national development plan. Today, we do have a national development plan. We do have a new growth path. And our planning in terms of our policies, in terms of our interventions, is making our life to be quite very easier. I'll give to my colleagues to also assist with the rest of the questions. Thanks very much, Mr. Luma.
Okay. Chair, the issue of challenges that was raised by Honourable Member on the colleges that they are not addressing. You see, the TVET colleges have just recently become the competence of National Department of Higher Education and Training. TVET colleges were provincial competence not very long time ago, and were the first one to concede that when we inherited the TVET colleges, the Department of Higher Education and Training, one member in another portfolio committee said that we got a hospital ball. It has been a hospital ball, and it's something that we're trying to fix. But the issue again that was raised by Honourable Member, that is it good to have more university graduates as against TVET graduates? Correct? In our white paper, this is what needs to be changed, because we're the only country that is focusing more on university education as against the TVET. Hence, we don't have a choice but to fix the TVET system. You know, out of 10 students that pass matric, only 3 go to university. And 7, where do they go? And our white paper and our plan is that we must increase the participation, not only the participation in the TVET sector, but the issue of quality. Now, the CETAs, I think, Honourable Member, let's explain this issue that, of course, CETAs will always be seen as in a negative light. CETAs do not train. Let me repeat, CETAs do not do any training, but CETAs facilitate training. Now, the stats that Mr. Mvalo spoke about on learnership, how does it happen? And you may not even know that this is the CETA funding, this is the CETA that is doing that. Because what the employers do, employers apply from the CETAs for a particular learnership, because you can't do a learnership in the college or in the university. A learnership has to be done in the workplace. So what the employers do, they submit the application for grant to the CETAs to do a particular learnership. Then the CETA allocates the grant to that employer. Now, when these learnerships are advertised in the paper, they don't come up as service CETA learnership or MQA learnerships. But that particular employer, Eskom, for instance, will receive a grant from Energy. Then they would advertise. And as Honourable Members, all what you are going to see, not that Eskom is not doing anything, but Eskom is doing something. But it is a facilitated learnership by a CETA. But it is the employer that does the training. I thought we need to indicate. And the issue of quality, because, you see, the training is done at the institutions and at the workplace. And then the CETA is in between, and it facilitates. Now, if then you're talking about the quality, then who then takes responsibility of the quality? Because the quality, the theory comes from the college or from the University of Technology, and also the actual training happens in the workplace under the supervision of a mentor in the form of an apprentice. Targets, how are the targets set? Then I think Mvalo has already indicated. Often, in fact not often, every year by 30th of April, the employers submit the workplace skills plan, indicating what their needs are for training. Now, once they submit that to the CETA, then the CETA look at it and couple it with the research that Mvalo spoke about, and they come up with the scarce skills, a pivotal list, having been triangulated in the form of research, and then the allocation of budget then is done in the form of what the employers require. So that's how we set the target. Are all the CETAs fulfilling the mandate? We think they are, but at a varying degree. You see, it's not a problem, because we don't want to necessarily that sitters must be under the department, but it's important to illustrate to the members that sitters are juristic persons. They have got their own boards and their own accounting authority and their own executive. What we do as a department is to play an oversight role. And therefore, the decision of how the money has to be spent is taken by the board. But all what we do is to guard that the money is not spent on something that is not in the list that has been provided to us. Because the sector skills plan that shall have been provided by the sector after the consultation of the employers and other relevant stakeholders is submitted, then we look at the APP and see if then there's alignment between what the sector has submitted as a plan. But in terms of the disbursement of funding, then the board, then they take that decision. The issue of artisan and bursaries, let me just check which questions have not been answered. Now, rural interventions. I think, honorable member, you raised. You see, there are rural interventions. In Mpumalanga, for instance, there are quite a number of projects that we can share with you that are funded by the SETA. Chieta, Chemica. Where? Where's Bushwari?
I don't want you to take me through the whole. I want you to tell me about Bushbagri
and Mwamitu. No, honorable member, at this time I can't have it on my fingertips, but because there are a lot of areas in South Africa, so I might not. But if you want that information, I think we can research and provide it to you in terms of in Bushbagri, what is happening. We will. As I'm saying, all what we do, we gather the information from the sitters, because they are the one who are implementing. Because Eshanze, I was going to indicate the chemical, but it's fine. You said you don't want that one. No, I'm fine. Why can't we do away with the sitters? As I have said, probably it's the issue of marketing and communication which we have raised with the sitters that needs to be done. Because with our engagement with the employers, and some employers are happy with the sitters, because they know that they get the funding to do this training. But the fact that, let me just give you just a practical example. There are quite a number of sitters that are providing funding to NSS. We can, just before we leave, we can give you that money. That amount. Now, sitters give the money to NFSAS, for instance. Now, NFSAS then distribute the money to the institution in terms of that. But when you are seated there, who is funding the student? It's NFSAS. But where does the money come from? It comes from the sitter. So we can't confuse, because NFSAS is the vehicle of the department. We can't be saying that in the application form there must be NFSAS or services sitter. Just about a year ago, Services CETA gave NFSAS 100 million to fund the students on bursaries. And I can give you the list of the amount of money that the CETAs are giving to NFSAS. So it's the issue of the communication, and we are saying as a department, we don't want CETAs to use a different vehicles, because we've got this NFSAS. The issue of qualifications, I'm not sure if there's one that I'm missing, which you can... Different systems. Different system that I'm talking about is the IT system, that you would have this sitter using this particular IT and their processes, and we concede that we need to streamline that, so that if you want to apply, the application is on the same date, and we use the same IT platform, and... the requirements are the same. Okay.
Thank you, Chair. Just a few questions on the one relating to whether the employers are opening up opportunities for learners to access learnerships and other things. The department engaged in a huge campaign to invite employers on a number of occasions. And as such, even the slogan of the department talks about turning every workspace into a training space. There has been lots of improvement in terms of how employers view TVET colleges and also how they are beginning to accept, especially students coming from that particular system. One member indicated that there needs to be more learners going the engineering route as opposed to the business route. This is the reason why the department is focusing on quality issues, especially in these programs that involve mathematics and engineering. There are quality interventions that are being undertaken by the department through monies mainly coming from the surpluses from the CITAS and also from the National Skills Fund. Like on the matters of curriculum, the maths and the language, there's a foundational program that is now under investigation, which is going to be deployed in all TVET colleges to address exactly some of the challenges that a number of young people, especially those who come from the higher, from the basic education system, who have the potential to take up maths and engineering programs, but lack here and there in terms of their preparation. And also there's direct interventions on campus manager training in the different TVETs, also funded through the levy system with the intention of improving the quality and capacity of the system in order to deliver on this key mandate. One of the things that the department, when it was formed, happened was that there was a study by the Ford Foundation that gave an indication of the fact that in the country we have got over 2.7 million young people who were neither in education or in employment or in training, which meant, and the age level of those young people is 16 to 24 years, and they are supposed to be in some kind of a post-school education and training system. And the fact that the TVET colleges at the time were not able to absorb bigger numbers meant that these young people will forever find themselves unable to enter an education system. That the focus on building the TVET system through these interventions, including forcing the CITA system to come and open offices that would facilitate the interaction between the workplace and the TVET colleges, is meant to open as many spaces and opportunities for training as is possible. Those sort of interventions, some of them are beginning to bear fruit in a number of colleges that have seen the need to participate fully in these changes. I've also mentioned the quality interventions that the department is rolling out. Thank you, Chair.
Honourable members, are there follow-up questions? But also, I know that some members would like to leave earlier. If we can be shortened to the point. Honourable Member Shopestole, Honourable Member Imam, we can combine this with new questions, if there are new questions. Please feel free. Okay.
Thank you, Chairperson. You know, in my previous life at the legislature of Limpopo, there was a time when there was funding for youth activities, and the commissioner on youth listed all the funding, and he said, Mobani, so much, it was a lot of money. Then I raised my hand, I said, how much goes to Bushbuckridge? And he was not very happy with me, but, you know, as a person who likes figures, I said, I wanted a breakdown, only to find that there was not one rand. So you fell into my trap, because when I asked you, you talked about Mpumalanga, you talked about Enhlanzeni, I'm saying Bushbuckridge. I've got a reason for saying this. It was named a presidential nodal point in 1994. Up to this day, it is a presidential nodal point. It was moved from Limpopo to Mpumalanga. If you go and check your statistics, you'll find that I think it has got the highest unemployment in the country. And when I go home, you know, I just see those children wasted. It pains my heart. And, you know why Donald Trump won? He went to places where Obama didn't go, Clinton didn't go. And I've got a friend, Dr. Figier, and I think you will be heading for Bush Buckwheat now. You know? I'm scared.
Thank you, Chair. Yeah. Two important points here, Ivan. Have you ever done some research? Would you be able to give us some statistics as to exactly what the skills shortage in this country is, as well as the demand in the different sectors, and how you are actually, and how that helps to enhance the kind of work you're doing to ensure that we meet the demands of the country? But specifically, I think more important that I want to know what is the skills shortage in the different areas in the country and what we're doing about it. You spoke about basic education, and we all know that we face very serious challenges in the basic education sector in terms of the quality of basic education. I know that a lot is being done, but I think a lot more needs to be done to be able to improve the quality, and that's why we're not getting the graduates in maths and science in that particular field, especially if you go to the rural areas. I must emphasize, really, the quality of education leaves a lot to be desired, and that is my serious problem, and I believe we need to address that. So are you engaging with the basic education department and things with regards to these things to try and get, because remember, if you find 1 in 10 in a Tivat college is not performing or is not, it's coming from somewhere. And they are not prepared fully to be where they are as a result of where they're coming from in terms of basic education. Finally, I just want to say, I don't believe in our vocabulary, in financial management in our country, there is such a thing called clean audit. There is such a thing called unqualified audit. And I want to differ with you when you say you got clean audits. I'd prefer you rather saying you got unqualified audits, because for me there's a major difference between the two. And maybe you can elaborate on that. I think the member knows what I'm talking about. Thank you.
In our meeting, where we don't have guests, please educate us about this difference between a clean audit and unqualified without findings. I mean, I'm addressing Honourable Member Ima. Okay, over. Are there any other follow-up questions? Follow-up? Nothing. May I please ask two questions, with your permission? In the 2016 budget review, the Department of DHET indicated that it will investigate how funds from the CETAS and National Skills Fund can be used to support universities and NSFAS. Kindly provide details of progress in this initiative and what has been achieved so far. But then also, the committee's mandate is spending issues and ensuring value for money. For value for money, good governance is critical. In terms of governance, we know that the safety and security is SASITA. Wholesale and retail sector, education and training, which is WNR CETA, culture, arts, tourism, and hospitality and sports CETA are under administration. When will this be resolved? What are the challenges? How can we help you to turn around the situation? The last one is, we know that only 1.6% of the unemployed participated in CETA supported learning programs, 1.6%. Why are so many unemployed not using CETA programs? Have you conducted a social impact assessment of the CETA programs for key sectors such as ICT? These are the three questions. I will now request for responses.
Thanks very much, Honorable Chairperson. Once again, we do appreciate the wisdom that you are getting in this committee, especially both in the form of questions and input, as well as to ideas that could assist us in going forward. On this area of as the department did identify skills shortage and demand. That's another angle that we're explaining as to how the CETAs will go up until coming up with a list of those ones that are top in that particular sector. But I must also hasten to mention that in 20, we started with, okay, I must start this year. 2016, 19 January, we published a list of occupations that are in demand in the country. And I must say it was a list, if we look into the methodology that was followed, it was quite very exhaustive. In as much as we're saying it will never be enough. And in that list, we advertised on the 19th January this year. We, in fact, it was a Gazette when we published. We explained the process, how we have come up with all of those occupations that are high in demand. But then if you go there, it's available also in the website when you Google list of occupations high in demand. You can use the date 19 January 2016. You'll see. But then we have not put them in order of priority because you might get on top maybe it's a medical doctor. But then that is not the case. It's like when we're doing the whole methodology exercise, consulting with the government department, with private sector, with professional bodies, and they will say, these in our sector, these are the skills that are required. And we know the list, we started in 2014, when we advertised, that was in November 2014, we had 100 occupations that are high in demand in the country. And then when we went to the second one, in January 2016, that one, mostly the participants were saying, let's not close to 100. Let's just identify those that we think are so much in demand in the country. But then I can tell you, if you look there, artisan is an area that seemingly is still on top. I want just to quickly share some information. There is a study. So it tells us that, therefore, what you are doing is also aligned internationally. There is a study that was done by another group, is called the MEN Group. This study was conducted in about more than 40 countries, 42 countries across the world. The report was made available last year. I think that was in December, if I'm correct, but it was last year. More than 42 countries, and they interviewed about 41,700 hiring managers. We know hiring managers, it would be, that is what they are nomenclature, they say hiring manager. We know it would be your HR managers, those who are involved with the hiring. So the question at the center was for them to identify those skills or those jobs that are difficult to fill. And number one on top globally, internationally, is skilled trade workers, artisans, especially chefs, bakers, butchers, mechanics, and electricians. So it tells us, therefore, that the work that we are doing as a department, and also when it's juxtaposed with international work that is being done, so there is that nexus in terms of the methodology that we are using in identifying those occupations that are high in demand. And also we released it through human, I think Mr. Mazama will speak on that one, also the book that we have just released, because I was not part of that session, whereby there was a workshop dealing with the supply and demand. The department has come up with a big book, and also it should be available on our website as to how we did make use of one of the methodologies to come up with skills and skills demand as well as the supply in the country. My colleagues will also, and I must say, Chairperson, I know you raised the issue of time. In the same study, this one, Talent Global Survey, Japan is in a worse position because 83% in Japan, they said, it's them who said they have got these jobs that are hard to fill, with a list which is, I should think, is Ireland at 11%, And South Africa, we're at 31%. The global average is around 38%. Japan is the worst hit country internationally in terms of the survey. Reasons that are being mentioned, and are similar to the reasons that have been mentioned also in the country, by order of priority, lack of available applicants. That's the situation if you look into your artisans and other occupations that are high in demand in the country, and lack of technical competences, meaning therefore those hard skills that we require, lack of experience. That is why we are focusing on workplace-based learning opportunities, because this is also coming internationally as number three in saying most employers, they say we need people with experience. You know, you can't buy experience. You can never, you can be a billionaire, but the experience you can't buy, because you must be at the workplace directly. Lastly, it was workplace competencies. I know it's soft skills, because employers, they say, okay, we have trained and borrowed an artisan, qualified artisans in electrician, but soft skills are lacking. So it's making it difficult. Therefore, Mvalo cannot work with teamwork, you know, all those soft skills, which are quite very important in training any other person, whether in artisan, whether in university, whether in a college. Mostly the industry will always raise these soft skills to say they are very important. So I think, colleagues, you will just quickly assist me in others, especially Mr. Lunga on the sitters that are under administration.
No. Thanks, Chair. There are three sitters currently that are under administration. Wholesale and retail sitter has been placed under administration just last month. So that one is still early days. Cat sitter is getting out of administration because they are in a cat sitter, culture, arts, tourism, hospitality. So that sitter was placed under administration, I think about 2 years ago. At the time when it was based on administration, it got qualified audit. I'm coming to your point. Then the following year, then the AG told us that they have obtained unqualified audit, and last year, or the year that has just ended, then the AG said it got clean audit. So is there a nomenclature?
Yeah.
So there seems to be a difference between unqualified and clean audit. But AG is better placed than two. And so both SASITA and CATSITA are getting out of, because we're in a process now of appointing new board. So they have submitted the constitution, and CATSITA, I know they have invited the nomination. So by end of March next year, in fact, by the 12th of April next year, so the new board would have taken over then the CATSITA. So with regards to wholesale and retail SITA, because I said it's only a month, even the gravity of the problems that we have there, the administrator still needs to give us a diagnostic report.
Thank you, Chair. Part of the reasons for establishment of the department was the recognition that there is a lack of a credible skills planning mechanism in the country, and that there needs to be a process to establish that and get to a point where we can deploy resources where they are most needed. That is for those skills that are going to grow the economy. And as such, the output one of the department speaks to a need to establish a credible skills planning mechanism. Similarly, when it comes to the NSTS 3, it speaks as its goal one, the need to establish this particular mechanism. The contribution of the SITAs would then be that one that talks to what the employers from the demand side of things are saying. This is where then our DDG was then referring to a report. The department entered into a partnership with the Human Resource Human Sciences Research Council and the University of Vets to establish what is now referred to as the labor market intelligence that would assist the department to understand the inputs from the side of the employers or the side of the labor market that will then inform the sort of skills that the department, through the different subsystems that it has, it must focus on. So the Human Sciences Research Council has then issued a report that gives an outline of both how the methods are being put together and also how the information filters through into the department. Currently, the department is in the process of establishing what is referred to as a skills planning unit that will then coordinate the work that used to be undertaken through this partnership by the Human Sciences Research Council and also the CITAS, and all of that will be situated in the department so that it is accessible to both the employers and also those who are in the education center. Thank you, Chair.
And National Skills Fund can be used to support universities and NSFAS. Honorable, okay, there's another follow-up. Honorable Member Dr. Fick.
Yeah, thanks, Chair. It's in relation to the statement, the last statement made, which concerns me now. You see, we had the TVET colleges, and then you established your CETAs. So you had 21 CEOs. Now I hear that you're going to establish a skills planning unit. Now again, what is the cost of that, and are we going to have another CEO? Thank you.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. Yeah, I feel I'd be failing in my duty if I didn't. Now that you know the problem throughout the world in terms of skills, and you know we've got a very high unemployment rate, can you not create some kind of website together with other parts of the world so that we can also export our skills, the excess skills we got, direct them based on the needs of other countries like Japan and export them, and they will in turn bring revenue back to our country because they're going to work there and come back. So have you got a program like that, or can you look into it?
Thank you, Chair. I think already South Africa is one of the biggest exporters of skills, especially doctors, accountants, nurses, and now recently teachers to English-speaking countries mainly. And I understand that it's a huge battle between some of the ministers that are directly impacted by this skills flow. We are not going to have another CEO. Member, it's a subdirectorate within the department that has to have those people who we were having in the Human Sciences Research Council now continuously analyzing the information, was having now the system and being able to say, okay, this is how information has to flow in order to inform you. You now have to have those people in the department so that there is the continuation of that process. Yes. The money is from the CITAS and the NSF. Maybe there's not a report per se at this point in time because the FISMAS fall of last year really impacted heavily on the process that the department was involved in. Because what was happening? From the surpluses that NSF received in order to look broadly at the PSET, we were still collating the different priorities within the PSET, be it your TVET colleges or your universities, and also internally in the department. And one of the things that Minister will always make reference to is this program of the NGAP, the new generation of academic program, where there is a need to replenish the number of academics that are operating in the system. And that it was one of the major priorities which was meant to be dealt with through this funding coming from the CITAS and the NSF. But a lot of that money had to then be diverted whilst the program is still a critical program for the department. So in that list, that of the key things that would enable the system to function properly as a system, the requirement was over 16 billion rands. And we're still then prioritizing within these priorities that have come from the different parts of the department. Up until then, and the only amount we had was approximately 3 billion rands. And so we had to find ways of fixing the system to the tune of 16 billion rands. So most of that money then ended up being used in other things other than what the department was trying to find money for. So what is happening now through these programs, your pivotal program, for instance, where the CITAs have got a direct link with universities through funding of bursaries, similarly with the NSF on a year-to-year basis, having to allocate 1.3 billion rands, a billion rands going towards the funding of bursaries in all the universities, and 300 million rands focusing on post-grad engagements up to postdoctoral engagements. So there is already this standard allocation which comes from both the National Skills Fund to focus on the higher education and also on the TVET college system. Currently, the NSF has just allocated 2.3 billion rands for the next coming 3 years to all the 50 colleges so that they embark on these occupational programs that are quite necessary to oil the economic engine, especially in the regions and also in the localities within which they operate.
Thank you so much. Honorable members, I really would like to thank you for the relevant questions that you raised, but also for your interactive and participative engagement. Thank you very much. I'd also like to thank the officials from the department for firstly coming, but also for the informative presentation and also for responding adequately to the issues raised by the honorable members. Well, from our engagement, it is clear that honorable members want to see the CITAs perform much better and want to see the impact of the work that CITAs do. For now, you heard, if I may quote honorable member Shopestole, said, "I don't know about you." That statement is a loaded statement, but I'm sure you've heard her. So you will now on reach out to the far rural communities and try and make an impact there, because you must remember, rural development is also government's priority. So, but we haven't seen it in terms of action. We've just heard about it. The action does not seem to be there. So if you can then make that impact as well. We do value the inputs of the department, and we will incorporate these and issues raised by the honorable members in our report and recommendation for the 2017 national budget. So thanks so much for coming, and I would like to thank the honorable members. Thank you once again to all of you for making this meeting a success. So we have now come to an end in a meeting between ourselves and your good self. Can I then, you can then be excused. Honourable members, just a few things as they walk out so that we then finalize.
Chair, point of order, yeah, Chair.
Did I hear point of order?
Yes, Chair.
Oh, yes.
I have a problem with Honourable Manana's hair, Chair. I can't engage with the presenter.
The problem is with you coming late and sitting at the back. When there are so plenty chairs there in front, you could have avoided this. So this one was avoidable.
But Chair, surely there should be a size together with
no.
Age and everything.
It's called freedom of expression. Okay. Shall we proceed? Okay, shall we proceed, honorable members? We are now on item number 5, which is correspondence, ne? After the deliberations. All right. We have received a correspondence from the International Relations Section,
Mr. Zingi Sakawe, whereby they are saying that they've received a request for a study visit by a delegation from the Committee on Health and Appropriations of the National Assembly of Nigeria on Wednesday, 30th of November. So there is this delegation that is coming from Nigeria, and they would like to interact with our good selves. So why I have brought this correspondence here, I want, because they're even giving us a date, which is Wednesday. We just wanted to inform the honorable members so that the honorable members can prepare themselves for this meeting, because when you look at our program, it is open, so meaning that we can go ahead, we can receive them and engage with them. But also we would like the researchers to research and give us information, because on exactly what is it, those areas of focus. But at an entry point, I received a briefing from the researchers. There's already an existing document, which I think can be used here. But look at it, because we're talking about yesterday's document. I'm sure you can still strengthen it so that we give them more recent information on our work. Thank you. Are we agreed to meet the delegation? Thank you very much. And then here, I've just decided, now that I'm talking about the international whatever, so on the international study tour, we have been requested to shift it from the 22nd to the 29th of January. Now, I thought I should put it to the honorable members so that they know what is expected of us. It is something that is feasible. We looked at it. We looked at the program. We said it's feasible. Actually, it will allow us to do some work before going, which will also show the one whom has authorized that we do take our work, prioritize our work, and thereafter go. 29th of January, and we have also, we are given a week, so we'll be away for 1 week. Can't be for 2 weeks, because if it's 2 weeks, it's going to be more expensive for the institution, but also what will we be doing? What about the work here? So we have been given 1 week, which I think is fair enough. And then our motivation is to do both trips. Maybe 2 days in this place, we travel, and then 2 days in this place, and then we, in this country, and then we come back, between Sweden and Germany. So we're waiting for the final, for the approval. And then as soon as we have the approval, we will then share that information with the members again, because we want you to be up to date with what is happening in the committee work. And then what we are requesting members is that they can start now just to, you know, prepare for the trip by getting your official passport. Yes. Get your official passports ready. Official passports ready, yeah. Get your official passports ready. Is there any addition? Okay.
Members, what will happen, the committee section will provide each of you with a letter, which needs to go, which you need to take to the Home Affairs people. That letter will just indicate that the committee is going on an international trip, and that they must assist with the necessary facilitation for your official passports. That's it. Thereafter, we'll worry about visas and that once we get the official passports.
Thanks. Sorry, Chair. Can I just suggest that if the members want to get the official, they must see Mr. Plaikis here in Barrack Street. He's very good, he's very accommodating, and you'll get it in about 3 days. Yeah, in the Barrack Street branch. Oh, the side.
Speaking from experience, you know, he's just returned from this important trip, so he's advising us with this fresh information. Okay, thank you very much. What is the letter? Okay, so they will, you will indicate to the secretary or to the secretariat those who need the official passport. I have, but those who need to be assisted.
I have.
Yeah, you have. Yeah. What do you have? Okay. Mr. Kwabaza, you have. Yeah. So that's fine. All right. We just want to get ready. All right. But then on the revised committee program, obviously, honorable members, the non-adoption of the Division of Revenue Amendment Bill in the House has also impacted on our program. So I would like the Secretariat to take us through those changes that have been effected on the program just for adoption by the honorable members. So we have had to adjust our program. But it's not too much, but you need to know about those adjustments. We respect you too much that we can't do things without you.
Chairperson?
A copy has been circulated?
Yeah, copies have been circulated to members. Don't have. Members will see that the main impact here is we now have to wait for the NCOP to finalize the 2016 Division of Revenue Amendment Bill. They will only be finalizing it on the 30th of November, the Wednesday, meaning we can only start with the processing of the Adjustments Appropriation Bill after the Division of Revenue Amendment Bill has been adopted in the NCOP. This now means that we will unfortunately not be able to see any departments for hearings on the Adjustments Appropriation Bill, given the time constraints. We've added some meetings that so that we can finalize our business, because it looks like we won't have that additional week which we initially thought. So for next week, Wednesday, for tomorrow, we are suggesting that next week, Wednesday. Tuesday will remain the same. National Treasury will do the public expenditure review. And then next Wednesday, we are suggesting that we do the committee's program for next term, finalize it so that it can be submitted to Mr. Froelich in time. Tuesday the 29th, we are suggesting that we do those two outstanding reports, the first one on the expenditure and the second one on the APEC conference. On the Wednesday, the chairperson already alluded to the delegation from the Nigerian Assembly. And then that's the day when the NCOP will finalize the Division of Revenue Amendment. And then Thursday, immediately after caucus, we have Treasury to brief both our committee and the Select Committee on Appropriations on the Adjustment Appropriation Bill. The Friday, we'll have the public hearings. We will circulate the comments. We only received three. And then that next Tuesday, we have to adopt the reports on the MTBPS, Adjustments Appropriation Bill, as well as the final the Finance Bill. That's it. Thank you.
Okay, honorable members, there you are. There's this new, updated program. Honorable member, Dr. Fick.
Just to confirm. Okay, it's fine. Can I speak? Just to confirm the time, the Friday the 2nd, is that right? The 14th to 16:30, is that right?
Friday.
Yeah, the 2nd of December.
Chairperson, if I may, sorry, apologies. This now obviously means that the proposed amendments from Dr. Fick and Mr. McLaughlin, they don't need to submit next week. They can if they want to, but they don't need to, because now the bill wouldn't have been referred by that time. So I don't know, Chairperson. I'm just...
Sorry, I agree with you. I think let's stick to the dates and it will make things more simpler.
Okay.
Any other matter from the honourable member on the
for coming, but also I want to thank you for your invaluable contribution for the whole week's work, and I'm happy with the stamina that I see here, but then let's keep the momentum, please, because it's not us who are dictating, it's the work that is dictating how many times we should sit. So we mustn't be angry, let's just keep the momentum. Thank you very much. The meeting stands adjourned.
Thank you very much.